been a while, and as usual, I'm Brian, and with me to my left is someone I've genuinely missed, Jason. How you doing, man?
Hello, everyone. Nice to hear your voice, Brian.
Yes, yes, it is nice to hear my voice.
Yes, it is. Nice to hear your voice.
And joining us this time will be a third Mike, my dog, because there's fireworks outside, and she's just a terrified little thing right now.
Yeah. It's awful.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what? I wouldn't mind it if, like, it was just, like, the city put on fireworks, but, like, drunk dude at 3 a.m. can just go to hell.
Yeah. You know? Last year here in L.A., like, there's a couple of shows you can kind of hear at a certain point of night, but then it just seemed to be, like, I swear it went on till 3 or 4 in the morning. Just this... Even if it was every 10 or 15 minutes or 30 minutes, there was just some explosion or a thing or a whiz bang or whatever. It was like, who are these people? What are they? Why aren't the people living next to them screaming if I'm way over here?
Yeah. I've noticed, like, the last couple of months, I've occasionally slept on my back deck because it's really nice outside. Mm. And I've had a lot of adventures on that back deck. Wolves, fireworks at all hours, sometimes not even on long weekends, like it's just Tuesday. But mostly my neighbor's kids smoking bongs, which is an unpleasant thing to wake up to at 2 in the morning when they're hacking up a lung. But, you know, I guess that's where you do it. But yeah, it's really interesting how many people just think fireworks, like, you know, it's Tuesday, I don't care. Yeah. And you're just sort of like,
it's November.
Yeah. Or did you find those? Like, what's going on?
Exactly.
And what's the occasion that you think that it warrants waking me up? I want to know that.
Disturbing people.
Yeah. I'm a jerk. So I thought this episode would be kind of fun now that there's no segue to the topic.
Fireworks. Like, we're talking about fireworks.
That's like such a dad subject.
Fireworks.
It came to my attention this week that I have been collecting toys for 40 years as of June of 1984, when I sent away for the Palitoy talking Dalek in an ad in the issue of Starlog. And I'm actually working on a Toy Ventures episode about that. But what I really wanted to discuss this time is different collecting cultures. And you and I have, in our experiences, come through many different collecting cultures. Mm-hmm. And I've just noticed it more and more now that I started publishing Toy Ventures, in that... You have to join a group and sort of talk to people, and you realize, like, we're all the same, but we're not. There's all kinds of nomenclature and terminology and hills to die on in different groups. And I find it a really fascinating thing.
I agree, but let me start by giving my thesis on one aspect that I've brought up many times over the years, and no one has really, I've never heard it countered. Like, I've never heard a decent, you know, argument against it. This is not gospel. This is not across the board 100% I'm saying this, but I will say that in my lifetime, whatever it is regarding collecting, it is a majority male habit. Whether it's vinyl records or sneakers or toys or baseball cards or bottle caps or whatever, I know there's a ton of female collectors out there that collect loads of stuff. But you'd have to admit that the overall majority in any of these categories we're talking about tends to be male. And I've always wanted to get to the root of what is it in the male sort of completest kind of psyche that drives them to collect things. Or, you know, well, I need to get those three as well. Oh, there's an import with an extra two tracks, I better get that too. Like, just being into a thing sometimes isn't enough. You have to have every bit of it, kind of.
I see what you're saying. You're saying that you're like, I've known millions of female collectors. You know, I don't think you would be able to find a lot of like Migos right now if it weren't for female collectors in the 1970s.
Okay, so that's probably Migos. But if you just, for example,
I realize what you're saying, and
if you just went on YouTube,
yeah,
and started rounding up the top, let's say 50 or 60 Star Wars collector videos that are talking about Star Wars stories.
Oh yeah, definitely. But that's a boys' category.
But
if you looked up the Barbie videos.
Well, if you looked up, let's say vinyl records.
I've got no.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is, again, this is not that women don't collect or there aren't.
No. I see what
that's
you're not saying.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying the overall majority of the obsessive have to have it all, need every variant. You know, look at my man cave with all my things on my shelves. And of all the people I've ever known, And all the collectors I've known, all the couples that I've known, et cetera. And I've asked, you know, dozens and dozens of women over the years, like, do you collect anything? Is there anything that you, well, probably shoes, you know, or whatever. Those are the kind of answers I get. But there, I've just always wondered why it's such a, what it is about being a completist or, you know, constantly finding new things to collect or wanting to collect that seems to be so majority male. I don't know what that is. Yeah, I don't know what it is. And it's not, I'm not saying it's a good or bad thing. I'm saying I don't know what that is. I'd like an answer as to why that is so, or why, you know, just even fact collecting is obsessively, you know, tends to be male. Again, not across the board. I'm saying the majority. And in my experience and in my life, that's what I've, you know, what I've.
You know, I always found it interesting that, you know, in high school and stuff, that like I was collecting in high school. And I would keep it on the DL because it didn't make a lot of sense to
broadcast,
blurt that out.
Yeah.
But dudes who collected like hockey cards were just completely normal. And it was like, that's, you know, that isn't, I don't understand why that's masculine.
Well, it's like the, you know, it's like the, it's totally okay to wear your favorite player's jersey and paint your face and go to the game. That's socially acceptable. But the kid who wears the Harry Potter robe that waits at midnight, you know, get made fun of and stuff. Like, no, it's, you know, and I've got friends that do the fantasy football thing, and they explained it to me once, and I said, sounds a little bit like Dungeons and Dragons, kind of, isn't it? No, it's totally different. No, it's totally different. And there's money involved, and there's, well, yeah, but you guys have like a draft. Yeah,
you could play Dungeons and Dragons for money. That'd be stupid, but you could do it.
You know, it's just some things are more socially acceptable or whatever. But yeah. Anyway, having said that, I just find that kind of a fascinating thing, and I'd love people to give their two cents as to what it is about, you know, collecting or having to know everything about a certain thing or whatever that seems to still be. I mean, if this was, you know, 40 years ago, there's no question. There's just, it's all dudes. It's changed drastically over the years, and that's great. Just like Comic-Con, when I'd say that, you know, years and years go by, and suddenly it's like, oh my God, there's so much, there's such a larger, you know, female contingent here than there was 10 years ago, whatever.
You know what? I went to a comic show when I was about 16 at the, there was a big Masonic temple in Toronto. And I can honestly remember there was a girl there digging through the bins. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, everybody just froze.
I proposed, you know.
Yeah, everyone froze. Like, excuse me, are you in the wrong place?
And you know what's funny is she was probably around my age. I was about 15 or 16, and she looked exactly like the. Remember when Sarah Gilbert was on The Simpsons, and she played like the neighbor's daughter, and Bart had a crush on her. It was damn, that is that girl.
Yeah, I mean, I saw it when I went to like Doctor Who conventions in the 80s. There were.
Oh yeah.
Tons of females.
I actually met some really nice girls at a convention once. Yeah, you know? That's true.
Yeah, but the collector gene seems to be, and especially if you look at these videos, for whatever it is, whether it's DVDs or vinyl or toys or whatever, it's just a bunch of dudes with beards, and I don't know why that is. But anyway, so your first non-current thing, like a vintage kind of thing, which you know at that point it's only, you know,
I'd never actually, like, I considered myself a collector before that, but I was like a 13-year-old kid, right? And what I think happened was, Doctor Who, and my fandom for Doctor Who made me realize that, like, there was an ad in the back of Starlog that said, we used to fill out, remember you'd send away for catalogs like TNK or whatever they were. They did the stickers and I've been digging through old Starlogs looking for that ad.
They made their own stickers and made.
Yeah. Yeah. I probably still have a couple of them where it's like, Daleks next to a staircase and they're like, what are we doing now?
The answer is 42.
Oh yeah. They did all that stuff and God bless them. It was just a good hustle.
Oh yeah,
Totally. Yeah, and by the way, an ad in Starlog, which probably produced 100,000 copies, was $33 for three lines back then.
For 1 month, really? $33.
Yeah, just for a three-line ad.
Oh wow, that's a little for like the mid-80s. That's a little surprising, but. But still, they probably
it's a classified ad. If they were national, they were international.
And SASE, I will never forget SASE.
Mm-hmm.
Discovering what that meant, I didn't know what it meant at first. I had to discover what it meant.
So my first venture into collecting would be, I think, the gateway thing, the comic book store. And it started very innocently that we had a used bookstore that, kind of slowly became a comic book store without ever getting rid of the used bookstore aspect of it.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget, like, I started taking the bus to another town to a comic store that's still in business. It was called Unicorn back then. Now it's called Worlds Collide. And that was more of a comic collector's shop.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being gatekept there. I would mispronounce an artist's name and I just that from the staff or, let me put that comic back in the bag, you amateur.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, I remember being kind of a little snooty. And then, I don't know, a year or two passed and I started to realize like, oh, these guys aren't that cool.
God, even back in 84.
Yeah, it was like, these guys are, that's not what's happening. They're just cool here. Yeah. And, but that was my first, and I really am not a comic collector. I used to love reading them, but once my joy for the stories left, the idea of buying stacks of comics and putting them away, it doesn't work for me. It doesn't have any sort of meaning to me. I do have a pile of comic books and I do have I do collect gold key Star Treks, but I don't care about condition. I buy them as I go. They're all in a box somewhere. And it's just that's just a weird thing. But like comic books, not my thing. Toys are definitely more my thing. But I did pick up a lot from that culture. And a lot of it is variant based nowadays.
Well, I think back to, I'm trying to think back to that time and like what I was, I kind of took a sabbatical after 83 when I really got to discover women, sort of dating a divorced woman, had a couple of teenage boys. No, I just sort of put,
I wouldn't put it past you
for a while, but, although I did date a couple of women when I was still in high school that were a little older that thought I was like 21. I had a fake ID. I don't know how on earth I pulled that off, but I did. I was going to like fucking discotheques like on
Saturday.
Let's
save that for your spinoff show.
Yeah, I should. I was like hanging out at the bar, like under this down the dance floor. I was like Danny Terrio. It was the thing. If I think about like current things, like Starlog was always a thing. I don't remember when it started, but I know like Starlog, Famous Monsters, late 70s when finding the poster in Famous Monsters of Doctor Who, finding the article of Doctor Who, it was the only way to get any information, finding the Pinnacle paperbacks, like at B. Dalton, that was something you could find. The Target books hadn't made their way over. And then it was that time that a friend of my cousin said, well, there's a magazine. And there was the one place downtown St. Paul called Shinders. They might have had a couple of different locations that was, periodicals from around the world, magazines and porn, lots of porn toward the back. And they had the Doctor
Who. Was the back larger than the front?
No, but it was dicey.
It wasn't the Canadian store.
Asking my brother to take me. My brother took me the first time and went, why do you want to go to this store? I'm like, I want to get this magazine. And he, you know, sort of kept watch. But there were all these creepy dudes and stuff. But that's where you had to go to get Doctor Who Monthly, which was on that newspaper print. And that kind of opened a door of like, okay, you know, this is an imported magazine. I'm getting current information, but I won't see these shows for a long time. And then slowly started to discover other used bookstores that started to carry things like that. And so it wasn't quite the comic book shop, but some of these eventually kind of bled into comic book shops that carried like the Doctor Who magazine and the, you know, I found the Marvel, you know, issues from whatever those, that 4-issue run or, you know, whatever, things like that. Had some of the weeklies and stuff. And then, of course, Starlog led to all the mail order stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So around the time you're talking about, I was kind of mailing away for stuff, but it was mainly printed stuff. Like I couldn't find, I would have no way of knowing how to find a, you know, a toy, like a vintage kind of toy sort of thing.
I think none of us did. And that's why you kind of stumble around trying other stuff. I ended up going to like any kind of show in my area, hoping something cool would show up there.
Yes, then that's another thing that started, which was a, you know, when I'd look in the back of Starlog, every month they would have conventions listed. And it always seemed to be West Coast, East Coast, nothing. The closest to me was Chicago. Like there was nothing in the Twin Cities ever. And then the first convention I went to was in Philadelphia in 85 when Mary Tam was there and Kirk's son, Merritt Buttrick, was there. My brother went to school out there. So when I took a trip out there, I said, well, look, I'd love to go to this thing, and went there for like a day. And that's where for the first time I saw actual physical specimens of the things I'd seen in Doctor Who magazine, like a talking Dalek and, you know, other kinds of toys. And that was an eye opener that, oh, this is where that stuff could be, is at conventions like this. And then slowly they started to kind of happen in the Twin Cities. I think a lot of it had to do with Doctor Who. When Doctor Who was getting really big in 84, 85, suddenly there were, you know, loads of conventions around the country.
Yeah, actually, I would say that corresponded with my collecting. Was, you know, I was big into Doctor Who fandom. I didn't feel like totally fit there, but I felt they were a welcoming bunch.
Yeah, it was kind of. I don't really think I had any friends that were into it. I mean, I kept it very secret, you know.
I actually did have friends. I had lunch with the guy I went to the first Doctor Who convention with in February. That was 39 years ago. Guest of honor, John Pertwee.
Wow. Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah, it was that was kind of an eye opener to kind of, you know, and then more mail order stuff in the back. But I never found mail order that had, you know, vintage. And then I kind of walked away through high school, you know, kind of. It wasn't until, you know, 89, 90 that I kind of went, oh, okay, these are the things I'm into. And I started to kind of, you know, the secondary stuff. It was a good time to collect some secondary Indiana Jones stuff and things like that. But what you want to kind of get to the root of is the differences in, or what was it that you were kind of?
Oh, I just kind of view it as almost like because I've kind of, I cross a lot of these boundaries. I like, you know, I collect horror Blu-rays and I collect, you know, Lego stuff for my kids. And you know, like I'm in all these worlds that I'm actually just a tourist in. And but there are people there that they live and breathe this stuff. So you start to look at idiosyncrasies, and it's almost like, I don't know, like an Edgar Rice Burroughs thing where you've got all these subcultures, you know, the further you go down, and they're like, these people do not like reproduction parts. Do not mention them here, you know. And I just kind of find the whole thing. Well, it's not amusing because we're just people, but it is fascinating nonetheless that we all have these subcultures. And even though we're all the same in one regard to the general public, it's so different. It's so interesting. And case in point, I don't collect Star Wars, vintage Star Wars, but I like it and I'm around it a lot. And there is a real divide between people who like reproductions and who hate them in that bunch. And coming from Amigo collector space, where Amigo collectors have always been customizers and improvisers and fixers of things, we don't frown on that as much.
And you rarely find anyone that collects both. It's very
Maybe in Star Wars, but in Mego, like, yeah, there's some no repro people in Mego.
No. I mean you don't tend to find people that collect Star Wars. That's their religion. That they're also collecting Mego religiously.
You'd be like, surprised. There are. I think I might know most of the people who do that. But
yeah, you probably do.
There are people that really are passionate about both. But I find it a very interesting. Pardon me, dichotomy. The other thing that I wanted to bring up, and I got a lot of these, but grading. Mego collectors, on the average, don't give a crap about grading. Whereas Star Wars people, they live and die by it for the most part.
Well, I think it's partially a generational thing, too. But that grading thing just became like this grift that became a jackpot for those people.
It's in comics too, and I don't even understand it in comics.
Action figures and Hot Wheels. It's like, oof, you know, you're kind of. I think at that point, if you're that deep into it, that you've kind. This is just my opinion. I'm not. You want to do that? That's your thing. Fine. I think you've
kind of. Yeah, it's your money, man.
I think you've kind of lost the plot slightly if you're doing the grading thing. I mean, there's people in vinyl collecting that, you know, hate the variants. Like a new album comes out and there's only, you know, 100 pressings on yellow vinyl from Jack White's, you know, record plant. And there's this and that, and there's two other, you know, they're uptight about that, you know, and then some have to have them all. Like there's a puritanism that kind of flows through a lot of this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Is wild to me, because it's all like, okay, whatever your thing is. But the grading thing is kind of like, I don't know, I just feel like you've, you know, this is all so random because people collect so much stuff, so many different things. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think I sort of reach a point of like, well, what are you, not like what's the point or what are you doing with it, I would never say that to people, but it's kind of like, if it's all in boxes in the other room, you know, when do you sort of enjoy it? Like, I've got a good friend who collects toy soldiers, like toy soldiers from the late 1800s, you know, early, you know, like the 1920s, oh, yeah. 30s, super high end, rare stuff to find a box of things. He's got cases and they're all, they're gorgeous. And I'm like, that's how you do it. That's the way to do it.
I kind of agree. If you can't display it or enjoy it, what is the point of it?
Yeah, kind of.
But that's my own personal thing. But, you know, it's funny. I know people like that with records. And I collect records. But it's not my main thing. It's my side thing. It's my little silly thing. And so while I waited in line one day for my wife's new Record Store Day Evanescence vinyl, that meant a lot to her, not to me. Whereas, like, I really don't care about Record Store Day at all. You know, I'll just take the regular release.
Yeah, every time. I mean, over here, like at Amoeba, you drive, they're lined up the night before.
Yeah, and I realized that, like, that's just not my scene.
And that happened, you know, very quickly. Like, that was a thing that and again, I'm all for all of this stuff. I love that people are passionate about things, and I think you should. I think it should, at the end of the day, it should be fun. You should enjoy it, and it should be fun. I think there's. I'm sure there's divisions in a lot of collecting.
Horrible, you know, divisions.
Gatekeeping. And
because there's people.
Yeah, you know, and that's when it just kind of bums me out. It just gets to be a drag. And I'm like, okay, I don't want to be near this. You know, I don't, the infighting And that, and actually, well, actually, you should know, you know, pushing the glasses up on the nose. It's like, this is, you know, I don't want to, you know.
I honestly, I mean, I've been running an action figure forum at the Mega Museum for a long time. And
really?
Yeah, 23 years. And yeah, this is probably like the worst year ever where I just don't find a lot of common ground. I see a lot of meanness. There's still a lot of really kind people, but I cannot get over, like, you know, you just start to look at it and go, like, this is just about toys. Stop.
We are such a
little microcosm.
Yeah.
You know, and drives me batty, but I'm just, you know, trying to focus on doing podcasts with my friend.
Well, my thing is, I've always liked a lot of stuff. I've collected, you know, books.
Yeah.
Music, you know, CDs, vinyl, toys, DVDs, etc. And, you know, it's just me. So, like, you know, I don't need to be, you know, Charles Foster Kane just surrounded by a bunch of shit. And so I've been really kind of jettisoning.
That would be a very different movie. I think we'd think very differently if Charles Foster Kane was surrounded by shit.
Yeah, not actual human shit.
Yeah.
And shit in the sense of stuff.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Just to be clear, if anybody was confused out there, I don't collect shit. That's the one thing I don't collect.
Rosebud was his crap.
It becomes like you kind of get trapped by a lot of it.
You don't
want to, you know, and it's like, it's a danger. I mean, I just think a lot of these videos I see on YouTube, certainly a lot of the discourse I've seen through the years about just, I mean, there's some people that just, it's not, you know, what I'm trying to say is like, I've got category. Like if I see something cool that I might want to have, I'll go, oh yeah, that looks really cool. I'll get that. I don't go, I've got to get the other 10 things in that line.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah.
That's a cool thing. But there are people that, well, I only collect this, and, you know, G.I. Joes, and then Masters of the Universe, and some Hollywood, and that's it. And then it kind of like, oh, when did you get that? Well, this is a brand new thing. And it's like they can't stop. They suddenly, the categories keep opening and opening and opening and opening. And it's like, that's when it kind of becomes like an addiction to me. And there doesn't seem to be a balance. And a lot of what I've seen, like, the last 10, 12 years, it seems like it's, and also a lot of like, look what I just got, you know, there's a lot of that stuff I see in different groups, and certainly the videos, especially the guys.
You and I are both like been here since the 80s though, so we've watched, you know, wouldn't it be great if somebody, you know, did this or that to the point where that we were being catered to, and I don't know if a lot of people have that luxury.
How do you
mean? Well, I mean, just think about like the late 1980s, there was no Marvel action figure license. You know, we were not being catered to very much.
Yeah.
To where now, most Star Wars pieces, most Marvel stuff, I would say, at least the stuff I see, is adult collector related.
Yes.
That is a huge shift. You know, we used to have to, you know, we'd get a toy line for a movie we liked, like, say, Jurassic Park, but everyone would be, like, jacked up, you know?
Oh, no, no.
Because they were for children.
That's all better. Like, that's all the stuff, the lunatics have sort of run the asylum now, and all the people that grew up with these things were put in positions, and you know, we've gotten more good than bad over the years, and things that we never thought we'd get. And Biff Bang Pow did a lot of that, where, like, brought things to life and fruition that nobody ever thought was going to happen. And those things wouldn't have started to happen if the culture wasn't changing and cult wasn't becoming more of a thing and DVD markets hadn't changed and things that failed when they came out sort of were resurrected and so on. So all those planets have lined up and we're spoiled for that stuff. But you also get, you know, an embarrassment of riches and still it's not enough
for a lot of people.
And still it's like, you know,
one of my biggest things with action figure collecting in general is a company will put out a wave of figures. Wave one has three characters from a show that has an ensemble of like 10. And these people are like, I'm not buying these unless they do all 10. And it's like, yeah, well, if the first three don't sell, you won't get the next three. You know, that's unfortunately how capitalism works.
Well, and to be fair, I see a lot of times with certain lines that I don't collect or anything, but I just notice and where I think, who's minding the store here? What is the timing on this thing? Why are you putting out, you know, eight of these characters when you know they're not going to move or whatever? Like, there's a lot of choices that have been made too that I think are kind of capsizing certain things because of it. Like, just there's some bad sort of decisions.
But, I would have to say that when every time I go to Toys R Us, I send my son photos and go like, what's Hasbro thinking?
Yeah, you know? it's
and it's like, I don't have any beef with Hasbro. I don't collect anything they make. But I do kind of wonder, like, did somebody at Hasbro really like Carl Weathers?
There's just some things that, again, it's an embarrassment of riches. There's some hinky kind of decisions that are getting made sometimes. And then you've got kind of a fickle, you know, public too. But it's like, now you've got the, you know, the, I mean, who somebody just sent me, maybe it was Rockford J. Somebody sent me a photo of a newsletter from 1981 of a Star Wars fan club, like this you know, 8-page newsletter that these two young women had started, this club that had been going for like 2 or 3 years. I guess mm-hmm. they put out like 4 issues a year or something, all typed, hand drawn drawing of Ben and Luke up at the top corner. And basically it was just the front page, and it was her editorial saying, we've decided to close the club because we hated The Empire Strikes Back so much. It was such a letdown. It was so not what Star Wars is. It is complete. This whole thing has completely lost the plot. This thing we've loved for so long and cherished and collected.
Oh my
and so
God,
on.
That's the
now
best
we're
thing
walking
ever.
Away. And I'm just like, oh my God. It's always been there. It was in the letters pages of Doctor Who magazine of like, you know, well, I think it could be this and that. So that
get
thing
rid
has
of
always
that Tom kind of, Baker idiot.
That thing has always been there. That element has always been there. It's just
now
that
they
now,
have a bigger, louder voice.
It's a
I
much
think.
Louder, bigger voice because yeah. it's so amplified and it
well,
goes
and that's,
out.
That's the other thing. Let's talk about this because this is something that drives me crazy. The toy company that brought you to collecting, the beloved property you love, now you hate them and they're the I don't understand that.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, to be fair, you can't collect, you know, if you're trying to collect a certain line, you might have to go, well, I got to pick and choose which ones I'm gonna
may
do.
I also say that I think modern toy collecting is madness because the more you buy, the more they'll make, and the more they'll make it harder for you to get it.
Well, and again, we're talking apples and oranges here. When you're going back to 84 and you're talking about collecting, you're talking about starting to get things that you missed first time around 10 years earlier. Mm-hmm. When I think about the term collecting today, it's in the truest sense of the word, meaning, yeah, you're collecting. You're going to buy the brand new thing that came out and you're putting it on in your pile. You can't wait to have an opening party on the weekend or something with the 15 things you got. You're collecting a piece of merchandise and a physical thing. But that's very different than collecting vintage things that are
sure.
You know what I mean? Like it's there.
But
like
nerdy treats
worlds.
Existed in the 80s because like I've just been going through all these Starlog ads and, you know, blueprints and model kits and like these were all new things being offered to people. So we were kind of into that back in the day, you know, just not so much with toys.
Yeah. And I don't think people were thinking in terms of I'm going to get that model kit. And now I'm going to get all of them and keep them in boxes until I'm dead kind of thing. It was,
some people did like that, though.
Yeah,
like,
no, clearly, because that's where the vintage, the secondary, you know, mm-hmm. stuff comes through. When you come across an item that's still in the package or, you know, that's from 1968 and it's still on the card, you're like, somebody put this away. So definitely people were
there. There was a local collector here that collected Aurora. His name was Philip. He's a nice guy. But my friend couldn't understand him because my friend loved to paint and build model kits. And this guy had like, I think he had three sealed Dr. Deadly model kits, which were only sold, I think, in Canada. I can't remember. And he wouldn't open one and paint it. Like, my friend said, why don't you at least make one of these, you know, to have it on display? And he's like, oh, no, I couldn't do that. And it was like, it was alien to my friend, you know. It was
I kept, you know, I don't know why I kept my Indiana Jones box for the Kenner Indiana Jones doll that I got that Christmas. I kept putting him back in the box, or like that ARC diecast Baltan. I was eight years old, but for some reason I wanted to keep that box and kept putting him back in. I think we were kind of the oddballs. That's like an odd sort of, this is my precious thing and it's so precious to me, I need it to be, you know, whatever. And
I think Fred Savage's voice has to kick it, or not Fred Savage's,
Daniel Stern's.
Daniel Stern's voice needs to kick in there.
I think that's kind of a kid thing. I think a lot of kids, more kids do that, I think, than people think. They want to keep their stuff in a certain, like, this is my stuff and I'm keeping the, you know, whatever. Like some kids, you know, there's the oddballs that kind of.
Hey, dude, I just bought a massive Star Wars collection from my friend's cousin. And the next day she brought over a shopping bag of all the box cutouts.
Well, see, there you go.
Yeah.
I mean,
and you know what? One of the box cutouts was like the rarest, like, Canadian Star Wars toy. It's that Palitoy Death Star, but in the Canadian box, which,
yeah.
And I was like, mother, like,
it's just, it's kind of like they're,
if she had, yeah. Sorry.
There was also that Starlog, when Starlog was publishing books. Like the special effects book.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that's mostly that, like, Steve Sansweet's collection.
It was. Yeah, it was Steve Sansweet. And that was a big eye opener for me to, an awareness. Like, I always talk about that big Buck Rogers collection of comic strips in the back. It was from 74, 75. I think the foreword was by Harlan Ellison. And in the back, four or five pages were photographic, black and white photographic shots of Buck Rogers merchandise from the 30s. Like, yeah. A disintegrator gun and whatever. And I was like, what is that? And then there was a book that came out in 89. I think it was Tomart, but it was called Space Adventure Collectibles. Do you remember that book?
I have that. I have it.
I have it still, too, because that thing.
It's on my nightstand. I was looking through it the other day.
That book and the It's a Small World catalog in 90. That was the internet of that time.
Oh, yeah.
That you had awareness of what was out there that you never would have discovered, you know, otherwise.
I'll go back even further. There was a book about Popeye that came out in conjunction with the Robin Williams film. And I got it. I was like that. I liked that movie and I always liked Popeye. And I loved this book about the history of Popeye.
That was one sale for that book company.
Yeah. Book. Oh, I think that book sold well because it was a great book. I mean, it wasn't about. It had nothing to do with Robin Williams. So, but my favorite pages in that were the merchandise. It was just amazing.
Where would you see it? Where would we have seen it?
Yeah,
you know,
it's
like that Space Adventures one was just like page after page after page of like, oh my God, like it's all here. He's got Dune stuff in here. He's got Buck Rogers stuff in here. And that's when and then I think a lot of education came from the toy shop paper as well. That was just like a glut of information every month. And especially in those guys like Toys and Stuff and some of those other guys would take.
Toys and Stuff in California, right?
Yeah. They would do like a 2-page color spread in the middle of the paper. And you're like, oh my God, there's a Turkish Star Wars board game. I've never seen this before. You know, weird stuff like that.
I bought the 12-inch Captain Scarlet off a Toys and Stuff ad off. I think his name was Tony.
He was a British guy.
Really expensive.
But that
I remember I called him once about some fist fighters. He's like, oh, I'm sorry, Mark Huckabone got those.
That fucking guy. But that was where the education came from. Like that was, and I still, you know, if you said, would you like a room full of this stuff or photos and books of all that, I would take the books. Because I just love, you know, I love seeing the thing and being educated on, you know, when it existed and where it came from and, you know, the artwork on the packaging and all that stuff. I love that stuff. But, you know, the internet, again, this amazing tool that changed everyone's lives and has brought us closer together than ever before. And boy, if you're into freaky deaky, you know, sexy stuff with a giraffe or whatever it is, you don't have to put an ad in the back of the, you know, jazz mag anymore. You can just find somebody on the internet that's that is a like-minded person and you can have lunch or whatever. All of that is good.
That's what I do with my fetish group.
In so many ways, it's good and bad, you know, where everybody's connected and you can find these. And of course, eBay was a huge, you know, a huge thing too. But I'm not saying it took the, you know, the fun away of hunting or whatever. There's still, but I think.
You do really see the sharp sides of it, right? Case in point, Blu-ray collecting, which is something I love. But I'm very casual about. As long as I can watch a copy of the film, I, you know, if I missed out on the Tectonic suitcase edition, well, it's fine. You know, I'm very rarely going to get the backstage pass on a movie, especially like, you know, the crap I watch. But I was really interested in this whole. War about slip cases recently, where like people were getting pissed off that they didn't get an exclusive slip cover, and I was just sitting there thinking, like, I don't even know where half the slip covers for my Blu-rays are. They don't mean anything to me, you know. I did like they did they sincerely don't I don't you know I just find them kind of interesting sometimes. You know,
but you've got, but again, you're talking about, again, this is why everybody's kink is whatever it is. And like, you don't care about those, but man, there's a VHS culture that's like, there's,
oh yeah, no, no.
A tweet about a guy that was making, that was, went to a, like a video, I don't know what kind of show this was, like a convention type thing. And this dude was doing VHS burns of movies. Like he did a VHS burn of Seven and made a custom slip cover. And they were selling, you know, like Matt, like people, like, I'd like to get a, you know, I'd like to have Seven on VHS and put it on my, you know, it's, and I love all that stuff. I love that people, you know, get into that stuff. I think part of the accessibility of all of it, that it's this constant 24/7 thing. I think it has kind of turned certain elements into, you know, there's always been comic book guy type characters. That's where the character came from. They've always been there.
But you know what? Actually, I think they were the pioneers of it because they didn't care what people thought of them.
They were, so, but I'm saying the guy that corrects you on the pronunciation said, well, actually that's not where you'd like to find. They've always existed, but now they are legion. I mean, they have multiplied to such a degree that it's like it's so hard to find anything positive.
Well, that's the part that really drives me crazy.
It's hard to find a video about a movie that goes, this is actually, I really like this movie and whatever it was, without somebody going, total studio sellout, you sucked up and you said how great it was. It's like, what is the point if it's just all this clickbait, how awful everything is?
I get to do the grand announcement occasionally for like Mego and other companies and showing off their figures. And I didn't make any of these things, you know, my hands did not touch them, but sometimes, the item looks good to me. I go, well, anybody who has a problem with that is being a knob. That looks really expectations met. And it's not because I have some love for the character. Half the time, I don't even like the character that much.
Let me guess. You say something like that. And you get accused of either you don't know what you're talking about.
I don't even usually conjecture anymore because I'm a shill. I don't know why I shill for anybody. You know, so it's
that's the tribal thing, and that's with every.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm not a true fan.
Let's take it to politics without getting specific. If you have always been, you know, let's say I'm left leaning or whatever it is, and you're staunch and you always have been. If you should say, well, I actually heard what so-and-so had to say, and I kind of agreed with what he said. It wasn't like, you fascist, you bugger, you know, it's like,
yeah,
you can't, it's all or nothing with these people.
Well, it just feels like some people like hate what they love. You've put that out to me a few times. Oh, yeah.
They love it so much, they hate it.
Yeah.
And that really started with Disney. There's a contingent with Disney, you know, park goers and collectors and stuff that are so they border on harassment, like harassing costumed characters and stuff. Like they, you know, they've got the tattoos of all the characters and whatever, and it becomes like an obsession. And it's like never, you know, I mean, that, you know, I saw some, I mean, people making 3-hour videos criticizing, you know, you got paid to go to Disney World to see a thing and do a thing, and you made a 3.5-hour video, you know, critiquing it to death. And it's like, what is the, I'm never going to be able to go to Disney World to do the thing you just did. But it's not enough. It's just not enough. There's this purity test with all of this stuff that has become such a nasty taste in my mouth that I don't want to be associated with.
Well,
today
a friend of mine sent me a meme somebody made of a recent figure reveal, and he's doctored it and he's made it stupid, and I just said to him, I was like, nothing seems to ever please anyone. Like, this guy's always got a nitpick, and it's like to the point of like, you know, I read a wonderful quote by Christopher Maloney that was like, there's a difference between childlike and childish. And childlike people always want to be happy. And I don't find, like, I don't find the merit, other than some sort of, I guess, negative camaraderie, to, you know, just sit there and bash things and people. And it just, I don't know. That feels like this is the wrong part of what we should be embracing, you know?
Yeah, it's like NECA did Flash Gordon.
Yeah.
When we announced Flash Gordon all those years ago, Randy Falk, it's the first time I met him at Comic-Con. He said, "Man, I'm so jealous you got that license. I didn't even know that was a thing you could do, and I want to do that so bad." He's a huge Flash Gordon fan. Mm-hmm. And we did the stuff that
Knew that. You told me that, I think.
We did very well with the stuff that we did, and we did it in different scales and so on and so forth. And then, you know, here it is many years later. You know, he gets Flash Gordon and he does those carded Mattel cards, and he does the Defenders of the Earth ones and whatever. And he's doing Flash Gordon movie ones. Well,
yeah,
you know, I saw the initial photos and went, you know, our Sam Jones is better, you know, but it's good. It's good, you know. And then, oh, Ming's in the military outfit. Smart. He didn't put him in the robes like we did. He knew put him in the military because people probably already have the Biff Bang Pow one in the robes.
I really like him in the military.
And then there's Voltan. Now, I can be critical and go, I don't need 4 heads. I don't need 8 sets of hands. What are you doing, NECA? Stop with the thing. But you think I'm not going to get the Voltan figure? Like, we wanted Voltan in the third wave. We never got to do it. Of course I'm going to get it. But that's the thing. Like, I don't know if some of these people, they're churlish and they're like, I'm not going to get it, or if they're bitching and they're still going to get it. When I hear people bitching about anything to do with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, or like that sculpt was off, or I wish the paint was, I think to myself, you talk about an embarrassment of rich. I mean, you throw a rock, you'll hit.
Don't they make one a day? Turtle.
It's like one a day. It's like it's in every iteration of the cartoon, the 2 movies, the I think they made another couple live action movies. Then NECA's doing another line that's from the cartoon that are super expensive. How much more can you possibly have? And you're still complaining that when are they going to do this one? But you know, well, it's that thing.
I think recently somebody I know, and I think it's a mutual friend of yours, posted a turtle and said, "Oh, well, they totally screwed this up." Fuck, and hell, if you held a gun to my head, Jason, I wouldn't know what did wrong.
You know, it's like, and it reminded me of, and I learned it very quickly, and I engaged for a brief amount of time when we started Biff Bang Pow, very briefly. And I learned very quickly to step away. I want nothing to do with this, because when you show photos of the brand new wave that we're taking orders now, it's not coming out for 6 months, but here you go. And the third comment down is, great, when are you going to make this character?
Oh, yeah.
So when are we going to see this? You go,
oh, yeah,
fuck you, dude. You are everything I hate about this stuff. And but there's a lot of that, like, well, you know, that's pretty cool, but they better do this. And a lot of that is like the one-upmanship, same as the guy behind the counter at the comic book shop that's going, well, actually, what they need to do, what they really should do. And you want to go, oh yeah, you You thought of that before.
I agree, and
you
I thought disagree.
Of that before anyone else. You get the blue Peter badge because you thought of before anybody else thought of it. But it's like you don't even get a chance to embrace the thing and go, my God, they're giving us. I'm making this.
Oh yeah,
up
no, I
the last Starfighter. They're really doing the last star. Oh my God, you're gonna have 10 guys come out and go, well, they shouldn't have led with that character. They should have, and it just becomes like you've sucked all the energy and fun out of the room. For everybody else, kind of, you know.
And well, they try to, and that's the part I just don't get is, and that's one thing that drives me crazy in collecting circles. It's not that people bash figures. I've grown deaf to that at this point. Everyone's got an opinion. It's fine. It's when someone buys something, and I've seen it, like where somebody's buying a ridiculous Mego figure that another person is offended by because they didn't get their choice. And then they basically, the person goes, oh, I'm so happy I got this 2D, which I don't think has happened, but you know, I'll just use that as an example. And then the person below will go, well, that's a piece of crap. And it's like, why would you do that to another human being?
Yeah.
Like why is your anger more important than their happiness? That's the part that I just want to go, you know, I think there should be an open-handed slap internet response.
Like, but it's also like, it's like, you know, would you, if the person posted a picture of their new haircut, would you go on there and go like, this looks stupid. It's a terrible haircut.
Yeah. If you did, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you'd go, well, I mean, I think that answer still goes with toys. Like, look at my new toy, and they go, stupid. You know, you can just go, what's wrong with you? Like, did mommy love you?
There's a lot of, like, stunted.
Well, that's the thing. There's a lot of broken toys, but toy collecting doesn't have a type. Maybe it is predominantly male, and I'll give you that because you may be onto something there.
No, it is. I know I'm right. I'm saying collecting anything. The collector thing, to want to have one of each or whatever it is, seems to be a predominantly male thing. Like, I think of anybody who's an authority on, you know, baseball cards or vinyl, whatever. Any of the just go through the videos. Like I watch one dude who does vinyl ones, like Beatles ones, about, you know, different. It's everywhere. There's something male about.
I don't know. You know what's weird is my wife watches a lot of collector YouTube. I don't, and she watches the predominantly female ones.
Okay, I'm telling you as a fact that it is predominantly male. I know there's women out there. I know that, but I'm saying it is a in my entire lifetime, I have never met a woman in my lifetime
that collects the way I have. 30%.
That is collect the way I have. I've met plenty of female collectors. I've never met anyone that collects the way I do, that collects and alphabetizes and needs to whatever.
I've never met anyone that collects like me either. So
I've personally never met that. I'm saying that there are collectors out there, but it's a different thing. It is a very, whether it's autographs or whatever, that you just, it tends to be a sea of dude faces with all this. It's just an observation. I don't know why that is. I don't know why men like collect sneakers, you know, like it's predominantly a male driven thing, you know, it could be Swatch watches. I don't know. There's plenty of women that collect. I know that, but there's something about, and I think it part of the, I'm trying to tie it into, maybe it's a competitive thing. Maybe there's some kind of competitive thing there of like, well, I've got to get all of these because I know a dude is also trying to or whatever. And you certainly could think that by looking at a lot of the videos and a lot of the comments and a lot of groups where it's like a competition. It's a constant competition with who can get what first and who has the most and whatever it is. And I think some of the vitriol, it's a very male thing too. Those kind of responses, you know, that kind of, you know,
I think I might know why it's so male dominated, and that would be because I think there was a social acceptance to like diecast cars and stuff.
Yeah.
Among men, you know what I mean? Like cars were seen, and when I first got into toy collecting, my gateway toy shows, they were all, you know, diecast. I was the new breed. You know, not looking for Stinkies and Corgis and Matchboxes. I was looking for action figures. And a lot of the times, the action figures were at the bottom of the table.
Yeah, I don't remember, like, when that sort of changed. But I actually went to, even, I actually come to think of it, I went to a Toy Soldier show with that friend.
No way.
Yeah. And the only women that were there were the wives. The wives of the guys that ran the tables were the only women there. It was,
but if you go to a horror con or even a modern day comic con, you will definitely see, I would say, 30% ladies.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. 25, 30% female. Exactly. But then if I went to poll them, if I went to poll them versus all the dudes collecting wise, I bet you would find that the dudes are more obsessive about what they collect than women. I don't know why that is. I don't know what it is, but I think there's a competitive nature to it. There's kind of like, well, I got to get that. Well, I've definitely got to get that, you know? And,
I won't pretend I don't have that urge, that itch.
You mean to compete with someone else to get something, you mean?
Well, I mean, it depends on the item. Not that I don't want that person to have it. I just want me to have it. So I can get competitive if that person has it, if that person has it and they don't want to sell it, I won't bother them. I will say, hey, if you ever sell that, you know, keep in mind that's it though. That's the, because I have people pressuring me all the time, and some people know how to walk the walk and build a relationship, and other guys send me gifts of money. Like, I've never seen, you know, $500 before. And it's like, oh, boy, you got no game.
Wow. You know? Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's an element. I don't know what it is, but there's something. God, when I think about a comment like somebody saying, look what I just got, you know, 2D or whatever, I'm like, stupid.
Yeah.
Like, what the energy it took you to put your fingers on the keyboard to even do that? Like, what is that in aid of? I don't know. But there's something very childish about a lot of it.
Yeah, take that doll you bought.
It's there. Like, and I here's just, the other thing. And this is a weird catch 22 about this, I think. And this is a good thing. And I think it's also a sort of not good thing. You know, we're talking about stuff from ancient history that we had to keep under the bed in a brown paper bag kind of thing. You did not talk about this stuff. You know, the first rule of,
how did you know about those magazines?
First rule of Geek Club is you do not talk about the shit you're into. But then something happened, I would say, in the mid-90s. You know, of course, the toy magazines have been going for a long time or whatever. But I think when the first prequel kind of came out and the internet was really becoming a thing, people were finding each other, it became far more socially acceptable to go to a toy store at midnight to get your toys.
That was social proof right there.
As a grown-up. And it was
realize, like, that looks like me, and I like that stuff. Yeah, I could see that. I can remember being, what was it, like 2003 when Masters of the Universe came back for the first time. It was 2002, 2003. Okay. And I was working. I worked for a company that serviced Toys R Us, and I was doing a spot check. And there was a man standing there, probably 18, 19 years old, not much older. And he was with his girlfriend and his mother. And he's like, oh, my God, He-Man. Oh, I've got to have it. And then he's like, oh, but they have Skeletor, too. And his mom and his girlfriend went, oh, just get them both, sweetie. And I wanted to just...
Yeah, it started to...
I hate you, accepting, you know, people.
Something happened in the 90s where it sort of became, you know, the geeks won, kind of. You know,
I was mad.
Editorial in, not an editorial, like an essay kind of thing, written by Mike Mignola. No, not Mike Mignola. Mike Alred. I want to say this is around 97 or so. Mm-hmm. And he wrote this thing about how, like, we are the pop culture elite. You know, stop hiding this stuff, because people got to realize, and this is before the first Watchmen movie, I mean, for the first X-Men movie came out, and before things really started to turn. And he was saying, we buy comic books, but we're also buying, you know, toys. We're the ones buying the album the day that it comes out. We're seeing the movie, you know, Friday, you know, night showing the day that it comes out. We're getting this or that. We're not just doing this one thing. And I'll never forget that. It was like, God, he really kind of nailed it, because it was a pop culture thing, not just a comic book thing. And things were starting to change where all of that was going. I mean, I couldn't see the future, but it was like, once I came out of X-Men, I went, they got it right. Oh my God, they really did it. They nailed it. They got it right. And then the waves, you know, kind of started to come. And now, you know, it runs so much of pop culture is run by the geeks and the people going to see these things and buying these things and whatever it is. So I think there's also this, the social acceptance has made it, you know, mm-hmm. wear it on your sleeve, but also kind of this, like, there's an entitlement that's sort of come with it too. There's an entitlement of, well, if not for us, this wouldn't even be happening right now. We're the ones that went, we made this happen and these movies came out, and you better get it right when you're making these toys. And they do it in these videos where it's like, we're going to stop watching Star Wars if you don't get it right. You know, it's like, really?
Except that we all have different opinions of what right is.
Yeah. If I hated something as much as you hated Star Wars, if I was into a band and it let me down like the last two or three albums, I'd go, you know what? Maybe I'm not into Striper anymore. Maybe I should move on or whatever. You know, get into something.
Don't talk crazy, man.
But these people are just like, here we go again. It's like, why are you putting yourself through? And it just becomes a grift or just this ugliness. But there's an entitlement of, we own this stuff. If not for us, this stuff wouldn't be whatever. And how dare you come in and enjoy it, or you take it and do something. Look, I'm the first one to be critical when they get it wrong. I'll watch whatever they give us. But when they get it wrong, I will happily say that and go, they kind of fucked that up or whatever. But I'm not stupid enough to think we are living in a world where these things are happening. We're getting so much stuff. You know, a Deadpool Wolverine movie is coming out. Like, this is crazy.
Oh, yeah. Like, that is total fan wank.
Crazy.
And,
you know, let's just enjoy what you like or whatever. But I think there's a little bit of entitlement that has come with a lot of this stuff because, you know, maybe it is slightly generational where they weren't quite hunting the way we did or whatever. I don't know. I don't know. Mm. I mean, I'd like to think there's more people that enjoy all of this stuff and buy it and dig it because they like it, you know, whatever it is, than all this stuff that we're the different levels of. But, you know, it's like we like that newsletter, the Star Wars, that we're closing the club. Well, why? Empire Strikes Back, what a joke of a movie that was. Had nothing close to the camaraderie and the spirit of the first film. Like, holy shit.
That is what is known as the wrong side of history.
Left Star Wars after Empire?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, you know what? You know what you can say though is that they probably all went to see Jedi and went, see.
Let's start the club again. We got to start it up again.
Oh, yeah.
Now it's back on track.
Ewok Club. The expectations must have been insane for Empire Strikes Back. Mine were met, but I was 9.
Oh, mine were, I was blown away by it, but I was emotionally scarred. I mean, I couldn't.
Oh, yeah, no, but I got, yeah, no, but I'm just trying to say it's like.
But like to go, that's it, I'm done with Star Wars. Like, wait a second, really? So
I just think about like years ago, I did not like the Colin Baker Doctor Who. So I stopped watching Doctor Who. I still hung out with friends who liked it, but yeah. I didn't watch it anymore. And then I watched a bit of the Trial for the Time Lord, but I was like, meh. I was never mad at it. There was other things to look at. Yeah. You know, there's more things to life and more things to discover at that time. And I felt, you know, like, okay, they still make Doctor Who. And I've gone through years where it's like, I don't want to watch this. And I'm still kind of like checking out new ones occasionally. And I even watched this, most of this new season. And we'll get into that in another time. But
yeah, we'll have
it, it's I don't know when I was last angry with anything, because if anything has shown us, you're going to get another Spider-Man, you're going to get a different Batman. You know, I mean, you and I are on our eighth Batman, ninth Batman, I don't even know. And it's just like things change all the time. Reboots happen. You know, I got the Tim Burton Planet of the Apes movie. I didn't like it. But then we got those Reeves movies were actually good and interesting. And now there's another film in the theater that I haven't seen. So it's just one of those things where it's like, if you just wait long enough,
I mean,
something will come.
I keep saying this, and I know it's a broken record, but I think the lofty sort of attitudes or positions that we have might slightly come from the fact that, I'm sorry, everyone, to break this to you, but we got the best shit in the 70s and 80s. Like all the stuff, and I include Star Trek in that, because Star Trek really took off in the 70s.
Sure.
You know, when that culture started up, we're still talking about all of it. Like, there's a new Beverly Hills Cop 40 years later. That movie still holds up, and generation after generation knows that movie. There's a new Beetlejuice in the fall. Like, they're, you know, because we also knew what it was to wait for things and cherish them when they came and then get them on VHS, watch them over and over and over again. We didn't think there was another Streetcar, you know, down the road. Like, we had to wait for stuff. So I look around at like all the choices and all the things and go, my God, like, this is an embarrassment of riches. There's so much stuff to choose from. Who'd have thought that we'd get so much stuff one day that, you know, we were so hungry for so long. So I don't look the gift horse in the mouth. I kind of go, well, damn, they're doing that. Okay. I'll watch it, or I'll go see it, or I'll eventually, whatever, because, you know, we got excited by, you know, no shade on any of these things, but, you know, the Phantom, like I saw the Phantom, I think twice in the theater. Cause it was a comic book movie, you know,
I love the Shadow.
Yeah.
I walked into a toy store recently in Toronto, and these guys were pricing Shadow figures, and they were making fun of the movie. And I was like, I actually really like that movie. And they're like, were you high?
There's so much that works. And then there's stuff that doesn't, where you go, why did you want to make this so tongue in cheek? I wish you hadn't. They could have lost some of that, and it would have been better. But when it works, it looks really good. And, you know,
I find Treat Williams, same problem with the Shadow that I had with the Phantom, is Treat Williams and Tim Curry are on 11, and they're but Tommy John Lee Lone. Jonesing. John Lone is great in the Shadow. He's absolutely great in the Shadow. And I can't remember the actor's name who played the Cabai Sung pirate in the Phantom is also like, I wish there was more of him.
Oh yeah, Carrie.
I know his name's Carrie, but I can't remember his last name.
Get his last name. Yeah. He's great.
Yeah. He's consistent.
Yeah. He's got an amazing face. Just an amazing face.
Yeah, like just, and a great just, delivery. He just has a good presence.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? Like that was stuff that was like, it was a big event thing, you know. But what's weird is now, you know, especially on Twitter, it's like people are, you know, jonesing over the Shadow and the Phantom. And it's like, it all comes around, you know. I don't know what the secret is. I just know that I think part of it is there's a lot of ways to amplify voices now, and everybody feels the need to kind of put their two cents in, sort of.
Yeah, I don't understand the rivalry with the, you know, you go on and it's like, well, do you think Hasbro's watching you? I don't know if they are, you know.
I think it's a monster that kind of got out of control. It's like,
I do too. Like
they started to understand, oh, well, maybe we could, you know, embrace the fans a little bit more down at Comic-Con and whatever, and have these things. And the door opened a bit and some input and so on. And then it sort of got out of control of like, well, I'm not getting those. And dude, nobody's listening to us. And, you know, it's, I mean, there's some, listen, I'll say this. There are some properties where I do feel like some decision-making is so tone deaf.
Yeah. Oh like, yeah, absolutely.
You might as well just make a different show. You might as well just create another show, because if you've taken something where it's unrecognizable, then you've lost the plot. Whatever you're doing, I don't know why you're doing it, but you're there's no way you can possibly think that the bulk of the audience is going to be okay with that. And it's happening. We're seeing it over and over again where the audience isn't. Not the fuckhead neckbeard lunatic people that they fucking ruined everything. They raped my face and they did all, they can't believe they did this. Not those guys. The average sort of fan of certain things is going, I this is awful. I can't watch that or whatever. And it's there's something really messed up about some legacy things that are being done.
Yeah, I mean, but my issue is that sometimes I don't like story writing in something, but then you go and there's people filling their diapers about the show. And you're like, I don't want to be involved with them either.
No,
like,
I
would love to have a frank discussion of what I like or don't like. I'm not mad about it. And I don't want to hear, you know, angry, dumb voices, you know, and
well, just,
to the point where I just was like, no, I don't like people like that. I think there's a lot of people being silenced by the people shouting.
That's right, because they're tainting the second you say, well, actually, I don't like it because, you know, this is you're lumped in to this category. And that's really dangerous.
Too, and those people are awful. And, I don't like the people who defend everything to a point like where it's like very clearly you have a personal stake in it. And I'm not going to say that's a bad thing because you're trying to be positive, but you can't. You know, it's just one of those things where it's all just parting shots. Everyone's just trying to get their shots in. That's how we communicate now.
Yeah.
And it's a terrible way to communicate.
It is. There's no nuance. There's no nuance.
There's no nuance. Say, there's no context.
This is what I liked. This is what I didn't. And this is why. And it has nothing to do with any of these clowns.
I read everything online in two voices. Duh, duh, duh. And that's...
But see, this is why if I'm going to criticize something, if I'm going to say why I don't like it or whatever, I have to watch it. And so I've probably watched more stuff the last 10 years that I wasn't really into or thought, okay, I got to finish now. Because if the conversation does come up, I want to say, yeah, I did take the journey. And this is why I don't think it's good. And this is why I think that movie was bad or whatever. And then the next one might come along and go, now that's more like, that's how they got it right or whatever. And it's all opinion, get it. But there is a weird, I think it's getting to a point where it's antagonistic. I think it's getting to a point with some of these things where it is very calculated to get those neckbeard dudes to go ape shit. Like some choices are being made. So this is really going to fuck with these guys because some of it is just, and it does the trick. It's red meat. It's absolute red meat for them.
Oh yeah. There's a couple of times where something's been said or done and I go, this is just for backlash and clicks. And you know, there's like, I'm not a scientist, but I assume there's, you know, there's profit to be had.
I mean, I'll say this.
We're all just kind of rubes sometimes, I think.
I'll say this without getting into specifics. Russell T. Davis, Shuti Gatwa, who I could not have been more excited about taking on the role. Every article, every interview, every time RTD was in front of a camera, I have never seen a property go out of its way to antagonize the fan base more than what they did when they brought this thing back.
Yeah, we should probably break this down, but I told a friend of mine, I feel like I'm a victim of friendly fire.
Yeah.
And I was on board, dude. Like, you know, I sat through all Torchwood. You know, we're cool.
What is this in aid of? What is
the audience, I don't know.
If you don't like it, then go outside and touch grass, whatever. What instead of like, and also, and I noticed this with other shows too, where I'm going, you know, there used to be like a system in place of PR where like any statement you make or any tweet or whatever it is, they're going to go, listen, what are you going to say?
I mean, you know, they'd probably be sitting in a box here, but they'd be in my home, you know. But yeah, he was a big
collector. And you know, Peter Cushing collected Toy soldiers. Yeah, collected and painted toy soldiers. Big collector. And Andy Partridge from XTC, big toy soldier.
I could just see Peter Cushing like, very good.
Yeah. And then he'd love nothing more than to have a glass of brandy and a line of Coke as soon as he was done painting his toy soldiers. Big Coke freak, Peter Cushing.
Yeah, he really looked it.
Nobody knew that. All right, there you go. That's welcome back. There's the return of Pod Stallions. I can't wait to get the letters come flooding in on that one.
Yeah, we get a lot of letters, Jason.
Yeah. All right, good talking to you. Enjoy. All right.
All right. Take care, everybody, and talk to you in a couple of weeks. Cheers.